It is 25 and a half minutes after the hour. It is a Transcendent Tuesday. We're joined by Dr. Don Clark. Don is a biochemist, a member of the Board of Creation Moments, and has spent many years. How many years in pharmaceuticals, Don?
Oh, how many years?
Does it qualify as many? I mean,
oh my goodness.
Resume time.
Hmm?
At least 15 years.
15 years, okay. Well, then this, this
in various forms or fashions.
This
15,
is
maybe 20 years.
Right up your alley then, because according to this Epoch Times article, there has been a comprehensive study. It does not say clinical study. It says comprehensive study conducted by the National Cancer Institute on the effectiveness of multivitamins. And their findings say that multivitamins, the use over time, does not promote a longer life. In fact, it leads to a 4% higher risk of mortality. In other words, if you're taking multivitamins, you have a slightly larger chance of dying. And that in this involved 390,000 people over 27 years. That those numbers make it sound terribly comprehensive, but to my mind make it awfully improbable that the results are defendable in any sense of the word. Now, you've taught us a lot about clinical studies over the years as we've gone through the COVID period. We learned that in the case of COVID, we, the general public, turned out to be the clinical study, and there's been largely mishandling and misreporting of the results of that, so we still don't know much about the COVID vaccines, except that we should beware of them. What can we conclude about multivitamins?
Well, I don't think this study is going to answer the question.
No.
Because it's you got a lot of confounding factors, of course, involved with this. And even the authors of the study said, just because we found this result doesn't necessarily mean there's a cause and effect. That is, if you take multiple vitamins, you have a 4% higher.
Shouldn't they have known that from the get-go that this would be not very useful information with that many people over that time? I mean, most of those people died by lightning strikes or car accidents, nothing to do with the multivitamins.
They did. I mean, the population size was pretty large. I mean, mm-hmm. Yes, they started off with 390,000 people, and of those 390,000, 165 passed away during the life of the study, which they followed them for 27 years.
Come on, so now, follow 390,000 people for 27 years? How do you do that? Do you write letters?
You probably send emails, send out letters. What they did, it looks like what they did was they send questionnaires to these folks. Folks agreed to participate in the study, and they sent questionnaires out to them, and they answered the questionnaires and got that data back. And then over the years, they analyzed the data. Of course, multivitamins come in all kinds of flavors and composition, and are they synthetic or are they natural? What they did find in general was that those people that took multivitamins were at least more concerned with their health and perhaps ate a little better than people that don't take multivitamins. But I think the big question with the vitamin issue, and everybody who is concerned about their health and wants to make sure they're getting all the nutrients they need in order to live as productively as they can, you have the question is, and of course this study didn't address it, what do I actually need? What vitamins do I actually need?
Good question, yes.
And
wouldn't that vary pretty much person to person?
There's all kinds of advertisements for vitamins, and take this to rejuvenate your life and you'll feel young again and you'll be strong and all this other stuff. But there is, to my knowledge, no company that's saying, hey, send in a blood sample and then we'll customize your vitamin requirements. Fill out this profile as to age and activity. Do you exercise or don't you exercise? And what type of diet do you normally eat, and then we'll tailor make the vitamins for you. There is a company that sort of does this by doing a DNA analysis, but it still, I think, you know, kind of falls short of, do I actually need all of these vitamins? And the only way to find that out is you got to do blood samples.
A blood test, and, yes.
You know, look for what is deficient. So if you're deficient in vitamin A, then you probably should take vitamin A. And I kind of do this with vitamin D. I mean, you know, there are some vitamins that I think everybody, you know, and minerals, because you got multivitamins, but you also have some have multi-minerals in them. And then the question is, do I need all these minerals? And maybe you do, and maybe you don't. And one mineral that everybody should be kind of cautious about is iron, because iron, I mean, literally causes you to rust on the inside. So too much iron is a problem.
You mean to say that tired blood is not a national pandemic?
Not anymore.
They claimed that.
Maybe if you were taking Geritol, you might consider not taking it. I mean, that was advertised mainly for women who have menstrual periods, and they obviously lose iron through the blood during that period. And actually, what I found through another practitioner, he said, hey, if you want to improve your health in the long run, donate blood. And you can donate blood once every 2 months. And donate blood, and when you donate blood, of course, you're getting rid of the iron that's in the blood, and so you reduce your iron load in your body, because too much iron causes, especially in men, but it would be in women as well, causes a lot of problem.
I recall back in the 1950s when Geritol was all the thing, and then the tired blood advertising was out there. And there were lots of iron supplements in everything we eat, including milk. They would supplement it with iron, and talk about how this and Cheerios, the red blood, and being like the Lone Ranger. It was, you needed iron, and then came a wave of prostate cancer among men, largely because of an excess of iron in their systems. Is that accurate? Do you remember that? I don't know if you're old enough to remember that.
Yes, it is very accurate. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of getting there that excess of iron can lead to prostate cancer. And so for us guys, it would be a good idea to donate blood if you can once every couple of months. And you're doing a good thing by donating, I mean, whole blood, obviously. Plasma, it's not going to do you any good because you're not getting rid of the iron. But you got to donate whole blood, and that.
So, are you saying there's still an excess of iron? Do we still have an excess of iron then? If you're recommending that, is that a normal situation that we've got too much iron in our system?
Probably in general, because if you look at, for example, cereals. Now, I don't eat cereals anymore. I used to. The cereals can be loaded, as you said, with Cheerios and some other Life, for example, has tremendous amount of iron. And that dietary iron is just going into your system and causing havoc. It also, excess iron causes inflammation because of the oxidation that it goes on. I mean, iron, if you have a metal product made of iron before we came up with stainless steel, for example, mm-hmm. that metal would rust. And rust is just oxidized iron. And so it kind of does the same thing in your system, which causes inflammation and can lead to an excess of iron, can lead to prostate cancer, as we mentioned.
Which leads to another question, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't believe the FDA tests vitamin supplements. Most everything I see says not approved by the FDA. So are there other vitamins that could be dangerous for us in excess?
There could be. I mean, most vitamins, actually vitamin A, can be toxic if taken too much of it. But for the most part, it's considered a food substance, and so it's not regulated like the drug industry was, like the industry I worked in is highly regulated, or at least it used to be. And so the multivitamins and these food supplements are not regulated to the same degree, and you don't have to go through an approval process like you do with a drug substance.
I've heard of people dying from a buildup and excess of vitamin D as well, and it has to do with calcium. In fact, there was the British man who died just recently, and that was the big news story. His system was just clogged up with, I believe it was calcium from a major doses of vitamin D he had been taking. Are you aware of that threat from vitamin D? Some vitamins you shed. Vitamin C, I understand, you just shed. You can't overdose because your body gets rid of excess vitamin C, but maybe vitamin D, maybe some other vitamins can be toxic as well as vitamin A.
Well, you have to take an extremely large amount of vitamin D for it to be toxic. Anyone who's really taking vitamin D, you have to get over 200 nanograms per 100 mils or whatever the unit is in your blood, and before you start seeing any effects from vitamin D toxicity.
What size dose of vitamin D, vitamin D3 in particular? I mean, how many in it's typically presented on the bottle in milligrams? Because I think the article I read about this gentleman dying, there was about 80 milligrams a day is okay. I looked at what I was taking, it was over 1,000, so I stopped taking it.
No, it's not milligrams, it's probably micrograms.
Still MG though, right?
The typical one is international units. They'll say on the bottle how many international units. And if you take, and this is another thing, it depends on your age, because as we age, our absorption capabilities is diminished as we age, and so you wind up taking more. Typically, 5,000 international units is not going to hurt you. I take 10,000, 5,000 in the morning and 5,000 in the evening. Mm. The key is, hey, get your vitamin D level measured every now and then. I do it twice a year just to kind of see where I am, because most people are very low on vitamin D. That in itself, there's been many, many studies done on vitamin D. Grassroots Health is a research organization where you can actually get test kits, which you take a blood, you prick your finger and drops of blood on a card, then you send the card in. They'll analyze for a lot of things if you want, but the primary thing is vitamin D, and you fill out a questionnaire. You send in your data, and they have, along with a lot of other folks, have done a lot of vitamin D studies. So if you're interested in this vitamin D question, I would send you to Grassroots Health to look up their information. They have plenty of papers and information published. And in one of the frequently asked questions, is vitamin D toxic and at what level? And they answer that question, and it's typically, okay, let's not go over 200 in your blood. Keep it above usually 40 to 60, and I believe it's micrograms per 100 mils or something. I'd have to look back.
How about in drugs?
If you keep it in that range, that's a good, healthy range, and vitamin D helps protect you from cancer. That's one of the things that vitamin D does, but it's involved in all kinds of systems in your body.
Now, if you see MG on a bottle, either a drug or a vitamin, you're saying that's micrograms, not milligrams.
No. MG is milligrams.
Okay.
So MCG is micrograms.
I should ignore that and look for IUs on it.
Yeah, look for the international units.
Mm-hmm. Who sets the standards for those? Now, my understanding is that the original minimum daily requirements for people was researched back in the 30s, primarily for the purpose of developing combat rations for military. And so they would make sure that there was enough vitamin content to keep a soldier active and alert and in the field and doing his work. But that was a long time ago. Has there been more recent research on what a minimum daily requirement is? And because we're all different, does that mean anything?
Well, you can only do these studies statistically, and you take a population and you see, and that's kind of what was done. But the minimum daily dose is far below what you actually need. So what they looked at was, okay, if we cut out this nutrient from your diet, for example, at what level do you start seeing ill effects? Which means, at what level do you start getting sick? Right? And then that became the minimum daily dose that you need, that threshold there between you have rickets, you don't have rickets. And so it is by far not the average dose that you should have, but it is the minimum to not get sick.
You mentioned rickets. There was a time when we were primarily an agricultural society back in the 20s and 30s. We had different diets. We have different diets now. Does it make sense to apply those same minimum daily requirements with a modern diet?
Well,
a hard question,
yeah.
I know.
We'll branch off into a different topic here in a minute, I think. But like I said, those minimum daily requirements, you need far more than the minimum daily requirements of the minerals or the vitamins that are listed. So if you're only getting the minimum daily, then you're probably not getting enough.
And I've noticed that on most of those vitamin bottles, they give you a percentage of the minimum daily requirement. It could be 1,000% or 200% or 600%, but it's almost always much larger than the so-called minimum daily requirement. And
it depends on the vitamin. To get back to this whole vitamin question, what should I take? What shouldn't I take? Like I said, the only real way of knowing what you need is to do a panel of here's all the vitamins that we've identified, and you do a blood sample, you do an analysis, and you find out, oh, I'm low on vitamin B. And which vitamin B, because there's a whole bunch of vitamin Bs that could be vitamin B6, could be 12, it could be a whole range of things. So doing that type of testing, I mean, it's expensive. I mean, it's going to cost you money, but at least you know that, oh, I need some vitamin B. So you can eat some green leafy vegetables to get vitamin B, or you can take a vitamin B supplement, and voila, you'll know if you really need vitamin B because your energy level is probably low. So instead of taking iron, maybe you should take vitamin B, to build up your energy level. But I guess the bigger question in my mind is not necessarily, I mean, if you eat fruits and vegetables and you get protein, good, healthy protein, you're probably doing okay for the most part. And then if you get out in the sun, you're getting vitamin D through sunshine. That's the best way to get vitamin D in your system. But if you stay in the office or in the house all day, don't get any sun, then you are going to be deficient in vitamin D and probably should be taking a supplement. It used to be that, okay, we were in agrarian society. We were outside. You can't deal with plants without being outside. So you're going to be outside. You got to exercise by hoeing the row or by weeding or whatever. And you were probably outside for hours. Those people probably had less skin cancer than we do today. And the primary reason is because they got a healthy dose of sunshine, which gave them a reasonable amount of vitamin D. And they didn't get sick from an overdose of vitamin D. Your body knows when to stop making it from sunshine. But in my mind, the biggest question is, what shouldn't I be eating? We've had a push in this country over the past probably 50 years with unhealthy oils. So we have gone from, for the most part, natural oils like olive oil or even butter either, you know, we can, even that in the 50s, we're saying, you know, they wanted you to stop eating butter and start eating margarine, which is high in polyunsaturated fats. And polyunsaturated fats do a number on your body. Like iron, they cause inflammation and they cause oxidation in your system. And especially, and they're easy to oxidize. If you use polyunsaturated fats for cooking, for example, they're very easy to oxidize. We have gone from a society of using tallow, which is animal fat, and butter, to using a lot of polyunsaturated fats. These polyunsaturated fats are making us ill. They cause metabolic syndrome, so your metabolism slows down. It's not necessarily, although if you overdose on sugar, it's not a good thing, but the polyunsaturated fats exacerbate that problem and make people fat. There have been studies now to show that it's the polyunsaturated fat that are helping to make people fat and not necessarily the carbohydrates that they're eating.
Which fats are polyunsaturated? You've got canola oil, corn oil, or kind of a generic vegetable oil. Are those the bad ones?
Yes. All of the seed oils. You got grapeseed oil, and that's been touted that all the grapeseed oil is great. Well, it's got a lot of polyunsaturated fat. The nut oils, canola oil is horrible for you for a number of reasons. One, it's got a lot of polyunsaturated fats, and it's got also glyphosate in it because right before they harvest the canola seed, they spray the plant with glyphosate. Then they harvest it, and so you got a high concentration of glyphosate, which I'm sure carries over into the oil. In general, seed oils, I mean, peanut butter has a lot of polyunsaturated fat, so consuming large quantities of peanut butter is not really healthy for you. Fried foods. Most of the oils used for frying foods are polyunsaturated fats, which get oxidized in the fryer, and then you fry your food, then you eat the food, and it has a lot of the oxidized saturated fats, polyunsaturated fats, in the food that you're eating. So staying away from fried foods, for example. Unfortunately, a lot of restaurants, because the oil is cheap, will use polyunsaturated fatty oils.
What's a safe oil? Only animal fats and butter?
Coconut oil is a safe oil because it's a saturated fat, primarily. Butter, cooking with butter is good for you. Unlike they tried to make butter out to be causing all kinds of heart disease, it's not. It does just the opposite. So butter is good. Tallow is good. You know, those type of saturated oils. Olive oil, if you don't heat it up and if you're just pouring it on your salad or something like that, I love olive oil. So olive oil and garlic, you know, I'm half Italian. It's kind of part of my diet. You got to be aware, is your olive oil 100% olive oil? Because this is an area that's not regulated.
So you're saying don't cook with it, right? You don't heat it then.
Yeah, don't. I mean, if you're mixing it in a sauce, that's one thing. But if you're putting it on a hot metal pan and you're using it to brown or something like that, you might be oxidizing some of the unsaturated fats in the oil. Better to use butter than that, or like I said, coconut oil is a good oil for frying and that, or for cooking on a pan, sauteing and stuff like that. Some of these manufacturers of olive oil are thinning them out with the polyunsaturated fats. And so you don't really know which is a good one and which is a bad one, unless you stick with a brand that has done some analysis to show you that, oh, our product is 100% pure olive oil.
And so, they would say that on the label?
They might. They might.
Because the brand I get from Costco, and then there's a couple of brands, Italian brands, that I get from Walmart, that always say 100% virgin olive oil. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, is the label accurate or
that's
is
a
it
good
reliable?
Question. Well, it's not regulated. So what does 100% mean? I mean, it could be 95%. It could be 80%. I mean, you know, yeah, without doing an analysis, I suppose. And I don't know if there's an organization out there that monitors these things. That'd be really a consumer benefit to know that, okay, we've taken these products from the shelves. We've sent them through gas chromatography, or we've done some analytical analysis on this, and we find that this product it says 100%, it is 100% olive oil.
Okay.
So there's nothing I can do at home.
Well, I'd look for, I mean, the first thing you would do is certainly look for the label that says it's 100%. You got a better chance of, if it doesn't say anything and it's a cheap olive oil, chances are it's probably adulterated in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, they do this with honey. You buy a bottle of honey and you think, oh, this is 100% honey, and it's not.
Okay, key question to kind of wrap things up here. Would you or would you not recommend taking a multivitamin? And the corollary question is, all this money that went into the study by the National Cancer Institute might not have been better spent studying what's in multivitamins. I mean, is it all vitamins? Is it filler? What's the shelf life? What do we know about multivitamins and safety?
Well, and there's so many different types of multivitamins out there, and I don't know if they actually asked the individuals what multivitamin are you taking. Grassroots does. I mean, Grassroots, they ask you, okay, how much magnesium are you getting? How much zinc are you getting? What's the product that you're taking? And they collect all that data. So at some point in time, they may report that. But I wouldn't take an off-the-shelf multivitamin, like the one-a-day type of vitamins. Mm-hmm. They're synthetic. Try to take something that's more organic and not necessarily synthetic. Of the things that I think most people should be taking is vitamin D, zinc, and magnesium. Zinc is very, I mean, you can get zinc poisoning if you take too much zinc, but you'll feel it. You'll know because you'll get nauseated. But both vitamin D and zinc are very beneficial for your immune system, or quite needed for your immune system. So keeping that up. And then the magnesium, most people don't have enough magnesium. Mm-hmm. So taking a good magnesium supplement, you do those three, you're probably covered for the most part.
How do we know? Can we tell on a blood test? And I'll make it.
You can tell
question.
On a blood test, and okay. you can get results from Grassroots Health.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and by the way, taking a blood test seems to be the full composition of physical exams these days. Because I go twice a year, they draw blood, I get a report of what I'm high in or what I'm low in, what's average, and I never see a doctor. I mean, that's a physical.
That's unfortunate. They're not doing any probing or looking. I mean, sometimes
chemical
they look
at you. But. Anyway, so Don got us through COVID, and he knows whereof he speaks, and we appreciate the information that he brought us today. Don, thanks very much for spending the time with us. I suspect there's a lot more we could say on vitamins and health and oils naturally and unnaturally. Read the labels and listen to Don on his podcasts. On Broken Road Radio. You can go up there to the podcast tab and listen to a long history of good advice from Dr. Don Clark. Don, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments. Their website is creationmoments.com. And there you find lots of scientific information about the biblical story of creation. And that's worth studying as well. And recommend you spend some time there at creationmoments.com. Don, have a great week. We'll see you in 7 days or so.
Yep, we'll see you next week. You folks have a good one.